This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To Will and Divi on 95.7 The Game.
Mark Schlereth in a half hour. Stink.
Yeah.
Take a whiff.
I will. And I just want to say this quickly and once because I don't love Mark Grandy, but I respect him, and okay. You know that. Yep. But the rejoin music with Ken on the ones and twos, we got some Halen. We've had some Zeppelin.
Wow.
Dude.
It's like all good music. It's a wonderful blend of joy and anger.
I like that.
And that's what happens when the Mets are tied 1-1 in a playoff series. Ken is wearing a different piece of Mets paraphernalia every day.
He's a New Yorker.
And the music, I think, reflects what happened over the last 24 hours with the Mets. So you're going to get a little bit of a harder sort of an approach today, I would argue.
And I also think that your joy and anger is perfectly appropriate for today because it's joy now and it's going to be anger later when the Mets are... Adios, pelota!
Is that a prediction?
Yes, the Mets are going to lose.
My ass!
You know why? Because it's what the Mets do. Meet the Mets, beat the Mets.
Everybody always
knows that you stink the Mets.
Ken, you should never be happier than right this moment. You just got guaranteed a win today.
Exactly.
So whatever, dude, I'm hot. I got a Thursday night lock coming, too.
Fade the Divers is coming up here in less than 2.5 hours.
And
very exciting.
I've deeply researched today's game.
Falcons and Bucks.
And I went through all the permutations. I ran multiple simulations on today's game.
You know what those are.
It's a permutation sensation.
It's exciting.
Cha-ching!
And I guarantee you, I go from 7-6 on the year to 8-6. I've got a Thursday night lock for you.
You can't guarantee. You're not allowed to do that.
All I do is win, aside from those six games and that one tie, no matter what.
All I do is win, and lose.
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever, tonight's different.
Where are we at? 2.5? 2.5, is that the number you're playing with? Is that right?
Yeah, I'll look at it.
That's what I see.
Falcons are favored by 2.5 over the Bucks, and your boy.
Maker Bayfield.
I have to stream him in our league. Jalen Hurts is on a bye. I have to stream Baker Mayfield. I had Derek Carr, but I can't play him against the Chiefs on Monday night. That defense is too good.
Yeah.
So I got to stream Baker Mayfield.
I've got Jared Goff on a bye, and my sources tell me that he may or may not be in the Bay Area getting ready for the biggest college football game in the Bay Area in a decade.
There's zero chance he's not here.
Jared Goff?
There's no way that Jared Goff from Marin Catholic and Calzone, he's not a Calzone, but
Calzone. It'd be a lot cooler if he was.
Yeah, like I'm hungry.
I love a Calzone.
I mean, Calzone. Thank you. And game day's here, and he's on a bye. Like, I'd be offended if I were Cal and Jared didn't come home.
Well, we know that Marshawn Lynch is going to be the guest picker at game day. Game day is going to be here in town, and I know we'll get into this more tomorrow, but my sources tell me that Jared Goff is or will be in the Bay Area. I called my Detroit Lions contact, and he said, yeah, I'm going to have to cut this short. I'm in Jamaica.
Oh, damn.
On a bye week. And I said, you do you, kid.
And he is.
Jamaica.
Woo!
Nothing like a little bye week flex.
Jamaica, a lot of money.
Dude, seriously.
Oh, man. Good for him.
And I'm pumped for this whole game day experience where students can line up as early as midnight tomorrow to go out to Berkeley and be a part of the game day experience. And I told you that I went to game day at A&M College Station against Tennessee. And it's one of those things where if you're into, forget sports and college football, if you're into like events with people and fun, game day is like at the peak.
Events with people and fun.
Right.
I'm pro events with people and fun.
Day drinking and sun and young people. That's, I mean, game day is about, I'm going to drink
it. I've never even, this is very high in the sports bucket list, I've never been to a college football game in the SEC. Like, I've never been.
Yeah.
I've never been to LSU. I've never been to Georgia, Bama, any of those places that you talk, like Tennessee, old Rocky Top. Like,
that was on my bucket list, too.
Never done
it. So I grabbed my college roommate, Kenny Flamer. We flew to Houston. It's about a 2.5-hour drive. Okay. To College Station, and we stayed three nights in some two-star motel and played a couple of rounds of golf and did game day and went to Kyle Field, and we did the Midnight Yell the night before, and it was awesome.
Did you have any drinks?
I'm gonna drink it.
As you're describing it, I'm like, he was drunk the whole time.
The whole time. Yeah. And so before the game, they have like an indoor tailgate in their indoor facility. And Coach Sumlin at the time.
Yes, Kevin Sumlin.
Kevin Sumlin and his family was there. And I'm doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife. And I look over and my buddy Kenny is like line dancing with Sumlin's daughters. And I'm like, this officially, they're at college age. Yeah, I'm going to drink it.
Yeah, but his wife wasn't. You're doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife?
Well, I mean, she didn't have to call plays. The hubby was busy. We were getting down, Coach. That was a fun tailgate on the AstroTurf.
And I jiggle it often.
Yeah, there was some jiggling that took place that day.
Oh, gosh.
Your boy was about 3/4 in the bag by kickoff. Sure. And then it went to double overtime. I'm surprised I made that.
I can't even picture you doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife
at like 10:30 in the morning.
What are you doing?
Pre-gaming. You got a pre-game, Coach. It's the SEC.
Oh, that's
not some second tier conference. Yeah, you got to do a big
by night operation.
Thank you. Anyway,
yeah. Anyway,
early plug for the Cal event.
No, let's go. I mean, I'm not going, but let's go. Like, if it was 413 years ago, I'd go.
I get that.
Yeah, I'm not going.
And I was telling Steiny, it's the biggest college football game since, and I looked it up. The last college football game locally.
Oh, in the Bay Area?
Right.
Okay.
And I went back I actually went back to, I think it was 2015, when Christian McCaffrey and an 8-1 Stanford hosted Oregon to DeForest Buckner. And Stanford scored, and they had to go for two to win it, and they didn't, and they lost.
Was that Andrew Luck, or was that post-Luck?
Might have been post-Luck. Okay. It was 2015, I believe, when Stanford was ranked number 7, and I think Oregon was ranked number 13.
Okay.
That, for me, locally anyway, and apologies to San Jose State. I know you've had some big games down there, and I don't want to disrespect your program.
There's a lot. If you want to get into when Aaron Rodgers was at Cal and USC was at the top of their game, and there have been a lot.
But that's further back than that.
Yes.
So I was thinking about the most recent game, up until now, and that year Stanford went 12-2, and they lost 38-36 to Oregon.
I remember that game.
Not in Palo Alto, Mark.
In Stanford,
as we discussed yesterday. Anyway,
learned my lesson.
I'm secretly kind of pumped for this game on Saturday.
Why wouldn't you be? No, it's not something that comes around very often. So I do hope that everybody just go. You're not going to have another chance to do this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And Bart actually is running early trains. They're running trains earlier than normal on Saturday so that you can get out to the game and you can partake in the festivities. So if you want to jump on a 3:30 a.m. BART train, you can.
When you see an event that's up your wheelhouse and you know, you can sit here right now and be like, this is the only time I'm ever going to have a chance to do it. You got to go.
Yep.
You got to go. If you're a Cal person, if you're a college football fan, if you're a sports fan, and this fits in any way, shape, or form into your weekend, you got to go. You got to go. I was texting somebody about this morning. I'm going to nerd out here. You'll think I'm a complete dork, but whatever, you already do. So, the band Oasis?
Yeah.
Right. So,
you love them.
I love them. And the brothers hated each other, and they broke up. This is the Eagles version of Hell Freezes Over. They were never going to speak to each other again. And then, poof, a month and a half ago, they got back together. They're doing a European tour, and then they announced 5 dates next year in the United States or in North America. I don't even think they're all in the United States.
Okay.
And one of them's in L.A. And you had to go online and try to get a code and, like, win a lottery to even have a chance at tickets. I didn't win. But I'm going to find my way into that damn building.
Oh, we'll get you in there.
I'm going to find my way into that damn building next year because this is it. If you like that, Kirk Cousins, tonight, 5:20.
Yeah, yeah. You like that?
If you, and I do. That's just me. Call me a dork. But if you like that, you got to go.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm not going to, this is, I don't think this is ever going to happen again. They're not going to just like each other now into their 70s. So anyway, yeah, you got to do it this weekend.
Well, I'll get you into that concert.
Thank you. How?
You know
oh,
how.
Oh, right. I forgot.
My
the
son's
whole, the
friend.
Ticket scam.
That's amazing. Ken, my son Quest has a good friend, yeah. Nina, who happens to be really good at acquiring tickets aftermarket.
She's got an illegal ticket ring.
Like, what black market is this?
Yeah, like,
incorrect. She was like able to get last-minute Taylor Swift for face value.
Right, the night before Taylor Swift, she's just like, yeah, I can get your face value tickets. I'm like, that doesn't exist. I've got a 15-year-old daughter. You can't do that. That's not a thing. And he's like, yeah, it is. I'm like, yeah, if you want to get arrested, it is.
My son and Nina were there, and granted it was a partially obstructed view, but they were in the building.
As long as you can hear it.
Exactly.
All right.
That's beautiful. We pivot.
I've always loved your son and Nina.
Yeah.
And I think the highest things of them, and it is in September at the Rose Bowl next year. Cheers.
We'll get you in.
All right, thank you.
As we pivot back to the Niners, I want to transition off of that Stanford game as a way to maybe cast some light on why we should be more patient with Christian McCaffrey in this recovery, because I'm looking at this game against Oregon in 2015. Christian McCaffrey, 33 carries for 153, 5 catches for 42. The man had 38 touches for 195 yards on a Saturday in November.
9 years ago.
Right.
He's been doing this
right.
for over a decade.
So if he wants to have, I know he doesn't want to have, but if he has bilateral Achilles tendonitis, can we give him till week 12 before we really try to rush this man back?
I think that the whole McCaffrey thing, it has totally chilled out. Go to whatever emotions were going through your body when we sat together on opening night and the news broke, whatever it was, an hour and a half to 2 hours before kickoff of the game against the Jets, and it felt like the whole NFL world went, oh God. And by the way, at that moment, in no way, shape, or form did we have any sense of the gravity of this.
Right.
It was just like, oh, he's not ready. Okay, well, we'll see him in Minnesota, I guess. That's how it felt that day, and it was still a huge deal. And now Jordan Mason has been Jordan Mason, and I don't think anybody in a rush? I think, actually, I hear more people say the opposite, which is that they're like, I'm sort of planning on Christian McCaffrey not playing this year at all.
This year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how people are at least approaching it. I don't think that that's the case, but I think that's what people are readying themselves for.
Yes, but I also think that, you know, as the season goes on, and if you lose to Seattle on Thursday and the Chiefs get you and the Cowboys get you and all of a sudden now you're 3-5, I do think that urgency will ramp up coming out of the bye. A lot of it depends on where you are going into the bye, because the sense is that he won't be back until after the bye, right? Which
right.
is early November. And at that point, if you're 8 games in and you have your bye in week 9 and you are 6-2, well then, yeah, Christian, just wait until December. Get you 2 games before the playoffs and then ramp you up for the stretch run. But if you're 3-5, I do think that the urgency is going to be a little bit different.
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting sort of way to look at it. I sort of more just think about it not in terms of the Niners' record, but I think about it in terms of Christian's legs. You know what I mean? Christian, we know who he is. When he's ready, he's going to play. It doesn't matter if the Niners are 6-2 or 2-6. When he's ready, he's going to go. He's going to go all out. And is he ready in November? Is he ready in December? Is he not ready at all? I can't answer any of that. It sounds to me like most of the expert voices who talk about this are trying to sort of like lessen the concern a little bit, and their loose target is early November. I think that that's probable. What is that? It's like the week 10-ish week.
Yeah,
right?
Week 10.
Week 10. And who is that? Who are they playing?
I'll punch it up. You've got the week. You've got week 9 is your bye.
Yeah, so there it is, coming out of the bye.
I think it's Buffalo. No, you've got Tampa Bay.
There you go.
Then Seattle, then Green Bay, then Buffalo.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's your odds on spot now, but like, yeah.
Tampa's November 10th, so you'd be looking at, that'd be 34 days from now, five weeks.
Another 5.5 weeks.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so, probably it.
Anyway, Schlereth is going to join us here in 13 minutes. 888-957-9570. How would you answer that question? We were talking a little bit about Ayuk. What do you see? What do you think's going on? Because the more I was listening to Stein and Goo talk about it, the conversations you and I have had, I do get, I'm starting to get Durant vibes. And I don't dislike, I love Kevin Durant. I don't even understand a lot of the angst that he's received from this particular fan base. But I wonder about Brandon Ayuk and whether or not he's a mind changer, which I think Kevin is. And it's okay. It's not a bad characteristic. It's just a characteristic. And it can make things difficult when two things happen. A, there is stress at work. And B, you're in a job that gets talked about a lot. I don't think Kevin Durant would have burner accounts if he had a job that wasn't so public. But I think that's one thing we probably have not talked about enough with Brandon Ayuk, is that while he was going through whatever he was going through this summer, and a contract negotiation and TikTok and all of the things that took place in a hold-in, I would argue for the first time in his life, he's really getting debated.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Out in the public space, he getting talked about. People have got big opinions. I'm one of those people. There are people saying things, I would argue, probably for the first time in his life, that aren't great. Opinions of people who are not agreeing with the way that he's going about his business. That affects some people in a significant way. Others blow it off and don't even know it's happening. I don't know if Tim Duncan even knows what social media is. I don't know if Kawhi Leonard, right? Oh, this guy's never healthy. Does he even know that people are saying that? Probably not. Brandon, who literally waged his war on social media, is probably very aware of what's going on. And if you take that out onto the field with you, I'd argue that's not a good thing.
Right, but I don't see that from Brandon Ayuk. I don't see him taking that out on the field. What I've seen from Brandon Ayuk is a guy who is drawing a lot more attention from defenses, and as a result, he's not getting the same number of targets. Juwan Jennings is benefiting from Brandon Ayuk being out there. Debo was back this weekend, and Ayuk got, you know, five targets, and of the five targets he got, two were throws that he could catch. A couple of them were overthrows. One was just a chuck it up for grabs into double coverage in the end zone that resulted in an interception, which, no big deal. You already had the lead, and Brock Purdy took a chance like he did with George Kittle, which was into triple coverage, and George Kittle was able to go up and get it. So I don't sense yet from Ayuk that level of frustration. I don't, and he's an interesting one because he wanted to get paid,
right,
and he got paid. And I think ultimately he wanted to be here and get paid. And so he got what he wanted. And now I think he wants to go out there and get targets and get catches and get wins. And so far he's not getting that. They're 2-2, not terrible. His target share is not what it was. His catch percentage is way down. He's at 52% catch percentage, which is what percentage of your targets do you catch? Last year he was in the mid-70s, and he has been most of his career. I think it's still so early that he's not yet showing that level of frustration that other receivers might already be.
It's a small sample, but yeah, if you kind of follow the timeline, you wonder, and I do have some compassion with this, even though I've been highly critical of the way all of this was handled. I have compassion for the idea that, okay, you go through a bumpy ride, then you sign your deal. What's the next thing you want to do if you're Brandon Ayuk?
Ball out.
You want to prove it.
Yep.
You want to show everybody that you are worth that deal. And then you go out there And what happens your very first night? First of all, you don't even get your full complement of snaps yet because you're not up to speed. But then when you do get your opportunity, what happens? Ball bounces off your arms in the end zone. Okay. So from that moment forward, you're sort of at a deficit. You're trying, in your mind at least, because I don't think the Niner fan base was ready to pounce at that point at all. It's like, all right, dude, he dropped the ball. You missed training camp. Some of us are frustrated by it. Some of us are not. Whatever. Is Kyle frustrated by it? Maybe. I don't know. But you dropped a ball. Everything's fine. The Niners win by double digits. You're 1-0. Everybody's celebrating. It's all good. But then what happens? You lose two football games in a row. And now, again, like how many catches has he had in the whole season? Has he had over three catches in a game yet?
He's got 13, yeah.
13?
Two with four.
Okay. So, but you start... He has not hit 50 yards yet in a game.
No.
All right.
No.
So it mounts. Week two.
No touchdowns.
A loss. No touchdown. Week three, a loss. He's open for a touchdown. Brock doesn't see him. He drops a couple more, my opinion. Anyway, he hasn't got, and so it starts to snowball where I would argue it's very possible that Brandon Ayuk is trying to prove something to a bunch of people that aren't asking him to do so. I don't need Brandon to prove that he's a good player. We already know that. That's done. That's a baked cake. Brandon's a really good player. What I would love to see is for Brandon A to make good on the opportunities that he's getting, and B, I really do hope that he and everyone around him, the whole team for that matter, hell, the whole city, from Blake Snell to Trent Williams to Brandon Ayuk and Nick Bosa, camp matters. Stop holding out. It screws things up. So learn that lesson and take that with you into the future. That's all you can do.
Right, but that's done. I mean, the whole idea of camp matters, and yes, Brandon, I think, said as much when he said, yeah, I kind of made things tougher than I probably should have and all that. And the whole idea of camp mattering, that ship has sailed because, yes, camp matters, and Blake Snell realized that camp matters, and he had two bad months, and he had two injuries early on, and Brandon Ayuk has 13 catches in four games, and if you look at yards per reception, it's as low as it was his rookie year, and his catch percentage is lowest of his career, and yards per target, the lowest. Touchdowns, he has zero. All the metrics are showing you that he's wide receiver three on this team.
Yep.
At best, and you are getting $30 million starting next year. So, yeah, I'm sure he's feeling it like, man, I want to go out there and prove it. But at the same time, there's more to it than just him producing numbers because he's going to draw a lot more attention defensively. And he played one game without Debo or George. And in that game, they were all over him, and Juwan Jennings went bananas. And so I think that there's more to it than just the numbers, but also – I wonder if there isn't a little piece of Kyle thinking, I'm going to scheme up plays for Juwan, who has been there, and Juwan's been the guy, and Debo is the wide back, and you had Debo start the game as the running back, and Kittle, and I wonder how much of that, like play design-wise, is going against him.
Mark Schlereth knows the Shanahan family real, 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 real well, and also did not like the idea of paying Brandon Ayuk. He's a great person to ask some of these questions because I really do want to dig into how Kyle probably feels about all of this. Is he actually mad, or is it just kind of one of those Steve Kerr, Draymond-type relationships where, you know, you take the annoyances, but you actually love the guy? I don't know. Let's get into that with Schlereth next. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises, Willard and Dibs.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.